Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, transformational change coach and author, Julie Wignall.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Paul Noel. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thanks to our guest tonight and her book and the inspiring talk we had prior to the show, I got to remember something that I hadn't thought of since I was for a long time. Definitely since I was a kid, but even as an adult, and I'll share what I mean by that. I also got to make a connection that I hadn't made until tonight, and almost just now. As a child, I remember reading about fireflies in storybooks. Growing up in Central California, I had never seen a firefly, though as a kid, I used to look for them because I had heard them in the storybooks and in the cartoons. But I never saw one. Sometimes I'd say, I think maybe, yeah, no. But one day as an adult, I was visiting a friend who lived in Pennsylvania. And the afternoon I got there, we walked on the grass of her expansive backyard. And we talked and we talked. And it started getting a little darker and then a little darker. And we kept talking. And I was enjoying our conversation until all of a sudden, something lit up right next to me. I jumped. I was startled. And I said, what was that? My friend started laughing. And she thought I was joking around, as I do. But no, I wasn't joking around. With her beautiful accent, she said, that was a firefly. You mean you've never seen a firefly? You must have seen a firefly. No, up until that moment, I had never seen a firefly. And as it got darker, it got colder, and my friend wanted to go back inside. But as it got darker, I was seeing more and more fireflies. I was fascinated, and I wanted to stay out and look at the fireflies. I think she went in, and I stayed out a little longer. They were real, and I was seeing them. I didn't know what to do. I just, like, this is magical. This is something I've never experienced before. Now, we're going to learn a little bit more about fireflies tonight. Why? Because in her book, our guest, Julie Wignall, titled the book, The Extraordinary Powers of Fireflies, How to Shine Your Light Brighter and Transform the World. Well, she's defining fireflies, or rather she's added a definition to the fireflies, or to the word, and she says it's someone who keeps or sees past the way things are to the way things could be. And so we'll get into that a little bit later with her. And I got to thinking, you know, at one point in my life, I didn't believe in fireflies, or I wasn't really sure if they existed, and I'd definitely never seen one. And for that matter, in my mind, not just the bug kind of fireflies, but the kind of fireflies that our guest is describing in the way that she describes them. And so as it's gotten darker and colder in the world, figuratively speaking, we're seeing, I think, more fireflies, and we're coming together. And she's one of them, as far as I'm concerned. Can't wait to have this conversation with her.
Either can I. And it calls to mind another flying, magical being, the butterfly.
Oh.
And it came up because while we're on our way to hearing her view on fireflies, it made me think about the conversation I had the other day where we were talking about being in the chrysalis. And that when you're in the chrysalis, they say that not until the imaginal cells overwhelm the caterpillar cells will there be a butterfly. And maybe the imaginal cells and fireflies are cousins.
Related for sure. They're both. There's got to be another word for bugs, but because they don't bug me at all, at least not those kind.
Oh wow! You should just get right into it now.
happily, actually, the title of our show is actually the title of her book, "The Extraordinary Power of Fireflies: How to Shine Your Light Brighter and Transform the World." This is episode 831. Our guest has done so many things, of which we'll touch upon some of them, and frankly, they probably got her to exactly where she is, and who else could talk about it like this but Julie Wignall, who's an unconventional trailblazer for transformational change. She's an author. She's a sought-after consultant. She's a workshop leader, a coach, and a speaker. Welcome, Julie Wignall, to the Life Changes Show. Julie, please unmute so we could hear your beautiful voice.
Oh my gosh, am I unmuted now?
You are. There it is. There you are.
I need a new career learning more about technology. I am so sorry, and thank you so much for having me here. Now that I've kind of figured this out, I touch too many buttons on computers and I never know what I'm touching.
Well, you have touched so many things in your life, and, so, and they've turned. I was going to say they've turned to gold, but I should say they've lit up like butterflies, fireflies. And the interesting thing is, did you know at a very young age that you wanted to do a lot of things, and you just couldn't wait to just get out there, and you left home for a different school or something, or were you being rebellious? What was happening?
Actually, I left school when I was 14. I thought that I hated school. Well, and I did. I went to school at a time where they started bringing in doing the dissections in biology. And I asked my professor one question: why do I have to open up these animals and dissect them, and what's the purpose of this? And he couldn't answer. And I thought, well, if you can't care enough to answer my question, then I really can't care enough to be here. So stubborn as I was and continue to be, I simply walked out of the class. Now, here's the crazy thing. I walked out of this class every day for an entire semester, and I still got a passing grade. And the reason was that animal rights was coming to a head. It was beginning to be a new thing, and they thought that I must be some animal rights activist, and they didn't want to bring attention to the school.
Wow. And I thought,
this is the silliest thing that I've ever heard.
Wow.
So I left school, but I found an alternative school. And this was at the time when the beginning of alternative education was coming to the forefront. There was the Summerhill Project. The school that I went to was based on a model called the Philadelphia Parkway School. And the concept was that we take kids and we tell them that we want them to be these great members of society, but we put them behind these walls and we keep them inside, and they don't know anything about society or culture or anything else. So this was kind of like a school without walls. And I fell in love with learning all over again. And I realized it was the basics of the administration in the school that I had a problem with, not learning. And I realized I loved learning. And I actually went from there and ended up attending college in California at the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California, where I then got bored with high school and said, I want to learn something more. Now, mind you, this had nothing to do with having great grades. I was no straight A student. But I said, I really want to learn. And I went to the dean of the school and I said, if you really believe that this is about education, then you'll help me. And he did. to his credit, and
Wow.
I
And to
kind of
yours.
but I kind of took an unconventional path, and I started thinking, just because we live in a culture or society that says that, this is the path that you have to take. If you say, oh, I want to grow up to be a blank, well, this is the way to get there. And the truth is, it's not always the way to get there. And as I went from one career to another, because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, and I found everything fascinating, I found more and more people who made it to the top of their careers without following that normal chain that you're supposed to follow to get from A to B to C. And I realized I might be unconventional, but that there were a lot of other people like me. And here I am today saying, I need to let everybody else know that whatever those dreams are that you have or that you're striving for, there are other ways to get there if you're feeling that there are roadblocks in front of you or you're having problems moving forward. There's always another way. And as I told you before, Philibo, I said, you're allowed to stop and rest and be really tired. You're allowed to get fed up and you're allowed to be frustrated, but you're not allowed to quit.
I really liked that. And the interesting thing is the frustration part of it is that there aren't a lot of people like you writing books and saying, hey, it's okay to do this. As a matter of fact, it's not just okay, but most of the people that many of us look up to did it this way too.
Yes. More than one. And as people become more noticed and bigger, all of a sudden they have marketing people. All of a sudden it makes them look like they have degrees that they don't necessarily have, or that they've got experience that they don't have, or awards. I learned that people make up awards. Did you know this? I swear
I
to God,
do.
I'm not making this up.
I do.
That, if you're not getting enough press or marketing, that I have seen people go, let's create this award and we're going to give it to our clients. And this is going to be something that we can market. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is real. I mean, people do this.
You know that creating awards, obviously, they've all been created. However, there needs to be a Firefly Award.
You know what? I've thought about that, and I would love that.
So,
But
yeah, go on. Tell us
no.
about the Firefly
Well, let me
What
tell you,
is it?
the most important thing about fireflies is what you said in your opening, that it was magic. It was right in front of you, and it was magic. And when we're little, when we're young, and you're reading books and you're entranced with fireflies, but you don't see any, we begin to lose faith that the magic is really there. And anyone who's ever seen a firefly has felt that. And it rekindles something that I believe that we've lost, that wonderment of childhood that really said, I really can do anything that I want. And I'm not here to teach people that they have a light because I think everybody knows that we as human beings do. I'm here just to remind everybody that you got the power inside of you. I mean, how many movies and films you've had the power in you all along? Well, we've got the power in us. We've had it all along. We just grew up and we forgot it.
Or it was not encouraged, or it was laughed at and discouraged.
All of the above. And then add to that, That as you get older, I think that every human being, I actually worked with a group of transformational authors, and there was a woman I worked with as I was working on this book, and her title, her working title was All God's Children Got Problems. And I thought, that's really perfect. I think that we all, everyone, at least I haven't met anyone who hasn't, we've all had some kind of traumatic experiences in childhood. Whether dysfunctional families, no support, no encouragement, even in the best of situations, there's usually something that's taken place that makes us re-question everything. And I feel that we spend a good deal of our adult lives trying to heal from that. And that's okay to heal, but you need to remember that you've had the power. All along, it got side railed and put to the side with people saying no or being discouraging. And the biggest problem with that is not that people don't support us, is that we get this message that we're not worthy, we're not good enough, we don't deserve to be happy, we don't deserve to succeed. And even when you see people who are happy, how many people does that upset? That person shouldn't be happy because I'm miserable. Well, I look at this in terms of fireflies that it's our right. Every single person on this planet is deserving of happiness and growth, and it's our right. And when we shine that light brighter, it actually is giving permission for someone else to say, hey, I can do that too. And that's part of the purpose of the whole book. Is to say, fireflies shine. Let's remember our magic. And it's not just my story, although my crazy story is outlined in there. I also highlight 20 different people from around the world who are unconventional in all different ways, all different careers and fields. They've followed their own paths and they're doing amazing things to transform the world. And they continue to inspire me every day.
So speaking of inspiring, so we know a little bit about your school experience and then you went into a politics. And then you went into oceanography. Now go on.
So to give you the full spectrum and range here, I had a mother who was very similar to an Auntie Mame type of character, was divorced, which was not acceptable at the time, and she worked with on one hand, she'd begun working in the theater, and then she worked with foreign military groups and embassies from around the world. It was a very strange combination. So I grew up understanding all kinds of different dysfunctional behaviors and international affairs and politics. And it took a while to figure that out, but somehow I found my way into politics. It was something that was offered to me. And I spent quite a while. I worked two presidential campaigns. On national staff, I worked for a congressman for a year and a half. But when I worked for the congressman, I was working on environmental issues. And I started learning that that was kind of interesting. Now, mind you, I also, throwing in other things here, I decided I needed to be the world's next leading lady on Broadway. So I worked in the theater as well. And found my way through there. I was in Washington, D.C., to a group called Living Stage, which was improvisational theater for social change. Kind of different, but very, very interesting. And I loved it. And I kind of put this all together, but I got burned out on politics. And this is how things work, which is why sometimes when you're frustrated, you need to step back and take a rest. I went and I took a job as a snorkeling instructor at a resort in Mexico.
As one does when they're frustrated and tired.
As one does, my mother always called it my beach bum days. I'm so proud of my daughter. She's a, what does she do? Oh, she's a beach bum. She teaches snorkeling in Mexico off the coast. But when I was there, I got the chance to recharge. To spend a lot of time thinking. I was spending every day in the ocean and I realized I was starting to pick up the seasons of the ocean and the changes, and I loved learning about that. And I met a man, an older gentleman, and I have to be honest, I don't speak Spanish. I pretend that I do, but not very well. And he didn't speak any English, but he would go out into the ocean. He would send me out and ask me to come back, and he would ask me what I saw. I'd say, well, nothing. I mean, the reefs around there at the time were pretty dead. And he'd go out and he'd sit in the water, and within 20 minutes, there would be fish, there would be dolphins coming around. I could see nurse sharks around the bottom. And he was what they called a shark caller. And I said, you know what? There's just something about the ocean. I need to learn more about it. So I left. I went, came back to the States and said, I need to go study marine biology and environmental conservation until I saw the costs of going to school here. And I went, this is crazy. And I ended up leaving the country again and I went to study in Australia, which sounds really, really exciting. But the truth is, it was cheaper than studying in the United States. It was a better education that I got to get. For I think my tuition was $2,200 a year. So even with
Good for
flying
you.
back and forth, that was a lot. It was a lot cheaper. That's my point. There's always another door. There's always a different way to accomplish what you want to accomplish. So I made my way back to the United States, worked my way up through the National Aquarium, which was in Washington, D.C. And one day, out of the blue, I got a call from a guy I thought was crazy, who asked me about building a dolphin facility in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I freaked. I had these visions of a Motel 6, dolphins pulling slot machines. And I was like, this isn't, I said, no, you can't do this. And he said to me, I'm not asking you, should I do it? I'm asking you, can I do it? And I took some time to think about this. And I said, well, actually, you can, and I'll send you information. But at the time I was looking at this, I was working with zoos and aquariums. You know, today I talk about this. And oh, at the time, I was working with the National Aquarium and the National Zoo and the Smithsonian Institution. Sounds pretty impressive, right? The truth is I was juggling three jobs just to try to pay bills on a monthly basis. And I was working with a lot of nonprofit organizations. And I noticed that the one thing we were doing constantly, we were always fundraising. And it was hard to accomplish and get anything done because we always had to make money. And I thought about this and I thought, what would happen if you take a conservationist and pair them with a big corporation? If they're open to this, can you really make a difference in the world? And long story short, I found my way to this crazy place of Las Vegas. I worked with Steve Wynn when he was changing the face of Las Vegas and at the very beginning of building the Mirage. And I got to have, I felt like I was ruling the world from my small office. I got to have a major impact on a company and working with teaching basic environment, you know, aside from the animals, which I got to set new standards around the world, I also got to help set new standards for the corporation to say, this is what we can do. And it was a matter of instead of fighting with someone saying you shouldn't do this or bashing them over the head, it was turning around and saying, you know what, here's some alternatives and here are some solutions. And they listened.
Interesting. I haven't thought about this. I do remember going to the couple of the hotels that we talked about as a young adult, and the animals were an attraction. And so, in a sense, what you helped create was also a way for Wynn to make money and the animals to be safe, right? And people to learn about them. Oh, I'm not going to say this, but it was a win-win.
Yeah, Good pun. Well, interesting thing to know. My whole division was set up to lose money. It wasn't even set up to be a money maker. And in terms of an attraction, because I was working with conservationists and I was also working in tandem with many different animal rights groups, and they said, no, we can't do any kind of advertising or anything that brings attention to this, because then it looks like they're just animals for show, and as an attraction. So we didn't even advertise that. It was,
Interesting.
believe it or not, it was word of mouth.
Word of mouth. Wow.
But the crazy thing, coming from a nonprofit, I got to learn business. They don't teach you that when you go study biology. I got to learn business and business management, and all of a sudden we were making money. And not even trying, we were making a net profit of, we started at 1.1 million a year, and it grew. And it was like, I'm not doing anything to do, I'm just following basic principles and providing the best that we possibly can provide for the animals. I mean, usually facilities have one veterinarian and a backup. And I play diva and I got three veterinarians. Well, you never know when someone's going to get sick, right? And I asked for the moon and we paid for it. We did the best of the best and it paid off. And I kept thinking, well, what if all of these nonprofits and other groups could start learning a little bit about business, so that they weren't spending all of their time just raising money, they were spending their time actually accomplishing something.
Wow. Good on you. And very interesting. Somebody looking at it would say, yeah, she was at the beaches in Mexico, Las Vegas. It looks like you're picking the resort and fun areas. But it
But life is supposed to be fun. Here's some things that
nice.
we forget, and this is part of the extraordinary power of fireflies. A couple of things to know for fireflies, and fireflies even of the humankind. Fireflies is the beetle. There are over 2,000 species. So this is a family that embraces a lot of diversity, because fireflies also glow in lots of different colors. We've got them in blue and yellow and orange and green and red. So this is kind of a neat group of beetles. Fireflies also, they glow just because they can. They don't ask someone for permission. How many times do we go, oh, I would do this, I have this vision for the world, but I don't know, nobody's going to let me do that. Well, fireflies don't ask for permission to shine their lights. They simply shine. Those are some good lessons to learn. And as fireflies and working with people around the world, we need to remember that we are magic, that the world is full of wonder, that you're not given any dreams that you cannot find a way to fulfill, and that you need to remember to play along the way. We have a culture that teaches us, oh, you can relax and enjoy this when you've made your first $1 million. Or when you've accomplished this, and we keep waiting, we keep putting things off. But what do you do the minute that you succeeded doing something? We stop, we go, oh, good for us, this feels great, terrific. And we're at the top of the mountain, we go, oh, I see a new mountain, let's go try climbing that one. So it's really not the accomplishment, it really is the journey along the way. But we have to remember to stop and have fun and laugh all along the way, so that when we get to the top, it's the accomplishments are great, but it's the moments that we connect where we're authentic and where we really relate with each other honestly on a one-on-one basis that really kind of change everything. And those are the things that become the most cherished and memorable moments along the way.
Well, and you go on to also say in your book that that fireflies contribute to making the world a better place. So we need more fireflies. So interestingly enough, you teach in your book how to be a firefly. You've already suggested a couple things just in the conversation and in your story, for example, as an example of how fireflies do. So what are a couple, you actually give exercises.
I do, and I have a free flyflies flying lessons for fireflies that can be downloaded on my website, which just puts you on a mailing list to get a piece of something inspiring as an email once a week. It doesn't sell anything. It's just because I think we all need a little bit of inspiration and encouragement. But what I teach, there's a lot of people that focus on what is your purpose, what gives your life meaning. And yes, I think that that's very important. But once you know that, I think what has become more important, especially today, is what are your codes of values? What's important? When we talk about how people act, and a lot of people today have forgotten this, but fireflies, I have a list of what resonates with you. Is it honesty, integrity, ethics? And it's important to know that code of values because that determines the choices that we make. If you have a code of values that includes honesty, and I ask you to go steal from me, you're not going to do it because that's not part of your code of ethics. And when we live by that code of ethics, we begin building up trust where people know, oh, I know that this is how this person is going to respond to this situation because they have that code of values. And then it becomes knowing what it is that even that makes us happy or how we define success. We have a society that says, well, you can't be successful unless you have a big home and 2.3 cars and 3.2 children. That's not what makes a lot of people happy. And it's time to spend the time to think about being happy. I actually worked with a group of 15-year-old boys at one point in along the way that were all in trouble. Their parents didn't know what to do with them, and they ended up at a like a wilderness type of seminar and camp. And they were getting therapy. But I sat, and they came from all over the United States. And I sat down with them the very first day, and I said, if I were your fairy godmother, and I come knocking at your door, and I say, whatever you wish, whatever would make you happy, I am here to grant that wish. What makes you happy, and what would you ask for? And I received, my response was a bunch of blank stares on faces. I expected them to say, oh, $1 million, or I need to be a rock star. They all stared at me and they said, no one's ever asked us what makes us happy. And over the next couple of days, I began hearing where there were little aha moments. I had one of the guys came up to me and said, I was thinking about it. What really makes me happy is Sunday mornings at home. We have a tradition where I make pancakes with my dad. For somebody else, it's taking a dog for a walk. They really do become those moments. And how can we be happy if we don't know what it is that even makes us happy? And again, we did know those things when we were little. If I asked you when you were little, what do you want to eat? I'm sure you would have had an answer. What's your favorite color? What's your favorite book? What do you like to do the most? We know all these things, but all of a sudden, we go, well, I like this. And all of a sudden you have an adult that says, oh no, you're too old for that. You don't need to like that anymore. And we go, oh, well, I thought I liked it, but maybe I don't like it anymore. And as time goes on, I think we've forgotten. And we need to get back to that.
So the website is Extraordinary Fireflies, and the book is The Extraordinary Power of Fireflies. And our guest is Julie Wignall, Wignall. We have lots of links for her on our webpage, but you can find her on all the socials at Power of Fireflies or Extraordinary Power of Fireflies. Julie, you shared with me a story that in closing I think would be perfect because I was saying in my monologue and throughout the show, we need more fireflies. And so fireflies are amazing and magical, as you say. You were sharing that, and I'm saying that also, that as things get dark, we can see the fireflies more. So things are dark in a sense in the world.
That's exactly right.
And so we need the fireflies to hopefully feel better about shining their light. Now, you said something And I don't even remember where, some part in the world where something happens that's extra special with fireflies.
Yes, right here in the United States,
Oh.
in the Smoky Mountains. Every summer, there are what we call the synchronous fireflies, and there are also the blue ghost fireflies. The blue ghost fireflies, they kind of hang around the bottom of the forest. The synchronous fireflies come out late at night and they shine their lights in unison, in synchronicity, 100 to 1,000 of them at a time. And then there will be another group of 100 to 1,000 at a time that answer. There are all these groups around which lights up. Now picture a forest that's so dark you can't see the tips of your fingers. And the entire forest completely gets lit up by these
Wow.
magical lights that are everywhere. And the concept is it is a dark time, but I believe that we're all here for a reason. And we're here to shine that light. And we need everybody's lights now more than ever. And the concept is with the synchronous fireflies, the more we all shine our light, we begin connecting with each other. It almost begins to work like a lighthouse. And the stronger we are, and we bring light to the darkness.
That's beautiful, Julie. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
You know, we have to meet. We already decided that before
Yes, we
the
definitely do. And I do have to tell you one final thing that I was listening to one of the podcasts, and you were saying, I'm not sure what you would call it when you have like a community of people that are like-minded that come together. And I was jumping up and down going, I know the answer to that.
Oh, tell me.
When you have a group, scientists, we're not very creative when it comes to names. A group of fireflies is called a sparkle posse. I tell everyone that's it's a little bit better than sparkle biology because it's their rear ends that light. It
Did you
says,
come up with that name, or that's what it's really, what somebody
actually,
called
that
you?
is really what it's called.
A sparkle, what?
Sparkle posse.
A sparkle posse.
All part of the sparkle posse. So I keep saying, I'm starting a movement and I'm bringing people in to become part of the sparkle posse, and
Well,
we're
I
going to
think you
take over
just
the world.
started it. I think you just started it, and you'll be giving the Fireflies Award. Invite me to that. I
We
will
will.
come.
We're going to do things before that, but we're going to be able to say it all started right here.
Right here. Well, you've been started long time ago as we were coming together, and the book, it starts, the subtitle is How to Shine Your Light Brighter and Transform the World. And the title is The Extraordinary Power of Fireflies. You've been listening to Julie Wignall. Again, you can find her on her website and download those free exercises that she talked about and learn more about the book at extraordinaryfireflies.com and also Extraordinary Power of Fireflies on social media. Julie, you're an absolute bright delight.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
This sure has. Until next time, all the best to you.
Thanks.
She sparkles, don't you think, Mark?
I'm pretty sure that we're a sparkle posse.
It just, I like it. It
What do you think, Dorothy?
I agree.
Well, we definitely shed some light on some very interesting things with our guest
Oh,
today.
you're on a roll. Should I just sit back and
No, please.
keep brightening us up with your humor? I really enjoyed her perspective on this, but it also brought me back to childhood because we would drive to North Carolina, and one of my favorite times of the year was being around those fireflies.
So it's a good analogy.
That's a great analogy.
I think we want to use the butterfly one is used a lot, like you mentioned at the beginning. So,
All right, we won't use that anymore.
no, I'm just
We'll just
saying,
go
let's.
use the fireflies
I'm
from now
saying
on.
this is good that you bring.
86 the butterflies.
I think it's now time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Melanie, and there was an earthquake last night about 20 miles from where I live in Los Angeles. I barely felt it, and yet so many of my friends are scared and are telling me I should move. I feel safe. Am I being foolish for wanting to stay in my present location?
Dearest Melanie, I felt the quake in my home last night and immediately thanked the universe for keeping me safe and the ones I love safe. I was back in a deep, peaceful sleep within seconds of giving thanks for us all being safe. However, I get why your friends might be worried. They're just concerned for your safety. Earthquakes are unpredictable, and the fear of a major one hitting can feel overwhelming. But the fact that you barely felt the earthquake means it was on the smaller side, which is a good sign. Los Angeles is in a seismic zone, so it's natural for some people to have heightened anxiety about it. But that doesn't mean you're being foolish for feeling safe. It might help to look at it this way. Earthquakes happen everywhere in California, but the risks are lower than people might think if they take the right precautions. For example, making sure your home is retrofitted for earthquakes, securing heavy furniture, and knowing basic safety steps during a quake can significantly reduce your risk. Plus, the region has strict building codes to ensure structures are safer in the event of a quake. If you feel secure in your home and have done the things that help mitigate risk, then staying doesn't seem foolish at all. It's all about how much you feel prepared and in control. Melanie, we've been friends for a long time, and I know that you're dialed in and have great intuition as to when to make an important decision. And moving is a very big and important one, and I'm proud of you for tuning in.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, shake things up and write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And with that, on our performance segment, we have a multi-talented artist, music producer, a songwriter, a performer, an educator, a YouTuber, and esteemed trombonist. He's known as Paul the Trombonist. He is Paul Nowell. Welcome, Paul, to the Life Changes Show.
It's an honor to be here, Filippo, Mark, Dorothy. Thanks for having me.
Such a pleasure to have you. And we have to thank Paul Frederick of the Big Lucky Band for introducing us to you. And you and I met under interesting circumstances, in a way, one can say.
That's correct.
I'm going to let you tell that part of the story.
Yeah, we first were discussing about doing a show together like this, and that was the night that my house burned down. Little did we know, a few hours later after we were talking, that my house would be burned down in the California fires.
Oh my goodness. And all I know is that we scheduled, I don't remember, a month or so in advance, and a month and a half maybe, and then as we got closer I wasn't hearing from you, and then finally I got to hear from you and you said, Filippo, I'm sorry, but my house burned down.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So here we are now, I think 2 months after or so. But you talk about, you have an interesting story around that too, yeah, in the sense that you were like, talk about life changes. Tell us that part.
Yeah. The timing is pretty interesting. So I just bought another home and we're going to rent out that home that burned down. And I moved everything out of that home 5 weeks before it burned down.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So like my studio, all my instruments and everything was saved. So
wow,
really blessed.
Well, blessed indeed. I can't imagine in any circumstance, but nonetheless grateful that you are alive and well, and you have a place to live, and that you're finally on the show. And you not only came highly recommended by Paul but not just for one reason. Paul was saying, like, he's a great trombonist, and he's also does all these other things. How did all these other things come to a trombonist?
I was always interested in a lot of different avenues. And once I get into something, I really like to explore it. I just kind of, I guess I would just be bored if I only played trombone.
Interesting. So did the trombone come first?
Yeah, I was, well, actually banjo was my first instrument. And then I learned guitar, piano, bass, and drums and everything. And in the school band, I picked up trombone, and then I knew I wanted to be a professional trombone player when I was probably like 13, 14 years old. And then I just pursued it.
In a moment, we're going to hear one of your original pieces, Journey to the World, where you are performing the trombone. Now, these are pieces that are part of an album. There aren't a lot of trombone albums out in the world, but you have found a way to make your own sound. You've combined styles, and tell us about the different styles and the different sounds.
Well, I just always was fascinated with the trombone. And the trombone at one point was the instrument. It was the first instrument to ever get a gold record. And that was Glenn Miller. And then Tommy Dorsey was like a rock star back in his era. And he was a
Wow.
trombonist. And Frank Sinatra said the reason he learned how to sing was listening to Tommy Dorsey because he was in his band. So there was an era when trombone was king. And actually, even going back farther than that, John Philip Sousa, his star soloist, was a trombone player named Arthur Pryor. And all, he was also a composer, and he was a household name, and he was a virtuoso. So trombone did have a time where it was pretty popular. So I guess I've kind of been on a mission to get the word out there as much as possible about the instrument and incorporate it in as many different contexts as possible, and to give it like a new audience, whatever that may be, just so people can fall in love with the beauty of the instrument like I have in my life.
Wow, well, good for you. I didn't know that about the trombone. I stand corrected. Are there a lot of albums of
Yeah,
trombonists?
there are. And whether or not a lot of people listen to them nowadays,
Okay.
there have been probably many tens, hundreds of thousands of trombone material out there. It's just whether or not people are listening to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm excited about that. Well, we've got the guy, Paul the trombonist, here in 2025 and beyond. So let's hear Journey to the World, unless there's something you want to share about it.
Yeah, this is a melody that I had in a dream.
Oh.
And I woke up at about 2 a.m. and I sang it into my voice memos because I'll forget it if I don't do that. And then what I did was I layered the trombone, just different textures and everything. And it's mostly trombone and some synth strings behind it.
Very nice. Well, here we're get to hear it. It's pre-recorded. This is Paul Nauelle and his song or piece, Journey to the World, here on the Life Changes Show.
Thank you.
thank you so much for sharing that with us. So I want to let everybody know, paulthetrombonist.com is where everybody can go to learn more about him. And speaking about learning more about him, he's also on all the socials. We have his links up on the Life Changes show, but you'll find him on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook. Look for him there. Now, speaking of learning from you, you're a YouTuber, and people have learned, amongst other things, people have learned on YouTube, but they've also learned from taking online courses from you. How did that begin? Hello?
Yeah, it first started with me sharing my love of the trombone and what I learned on the trombone with others on the YouTube channel. And then I started to teach other people how to play trombone. And then from there, I wrote a trombone method book, and that trombone method book paid off my Berklee College of Music tuition. And people were asking me how I was doing things online. So I was at gigs sharing with musicians how I was able to monetize my passion online. And then it just kind of started, it's just like naturally a company came out of it, and I started to help other people so I can impact more lives. And then I have a company that helps musicians to share their area of expertise and monetize it, and build an audience of people that are interested in learning what their expertise is.
So you have taken things to heights that a lot of people don't achieve. There may be trombone players, and they may be in this orchestra or that, but you've gotten to perform in some amazing venues and with amazing people and celebrities and soloing here and there. And then now you're one of the leading teachers for trombone, and at least how to make money off of it and all of that. And it seems exciting and fun. Have you had enough of that and there's something else, or you're going to take this to a whole other level?
Well, it's a combination of both. So there's always something else. I always get interested in other things. However, I like to take things as far as they can too, simultaneously. So I want to continue to produce other musicians and produce content and feature like world-class musicians. I just did one last week with Arturo Sandoval and Chucho.
Wow.
Yeah, and I produced a little live stream featuring some of the greatest piano players alive. And I just want to keep doing that and showcasing talent and growing my company too, because we are changing a lot of people's lives. Like, a lot of struggling musicians that were struggling are no longer struggling anymore from what we've shared with them. And I've actually created a couple millionaires, and I'm pretty happy about that and proud of it.
That's exciting, especially for musicians where there hasn't been, kind of like our guest was saying, Julie, how you don't learn about certain things in school, right? And not all music schools, or did you learn some of this in music school?
Oh, no, never. So. No, I had to study it separately. But right. I studied it, like I was telling you, I studied it just like the trombone. I would transcribe sales pitches, just like I did trombone solos. And I applied my knowledge of learning the trombone into business. And I learned it the exact same way I learned music. I would transcribe the greats, speech patterns, language patterns, and sales copy, just like I would tunes and transcriptions for soloists and improvisation. And then what ends up happening, it's the same process as learning an instrument. You end up finding your own voice, and it's like you learn your scales and forget them. Like, you know, that's the line Charlie Parker used to say on your instrument. And it's the same. It's the same with this. You absorb it all. You put all those inputs inside you, and then outputs come out where you're able to be your own.
Really, really exciting and good on you. And while you were sharing that, I just realized I've met you.
Oh, yeah.
I came to hear you perform. Actually, you were playing with one of the Marcellus brothers.
That's right, we did.
Right on. I'm like, all of a sudden I think I know him, but that was a couple years ago. And yeah, so yet another person. Yeah, you're You're out and about and doing it. So I like that story you shared about how the trombone was popular. And listening to that first song before we hear the next one, actually, as having you share that, I'm like, wait a minute, this does sound like some of the old movies used to do have more trombones in the music. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a little more prominent back in the day.
Well, might be more prominent again very soon, thanks to Paul the Trombonist. What are we going to get to hear? We're going to get to hear Morning. What's this about?
Yeah, Morning. You know when you wake up with the crack of dawn and there's dew on the blades of grass and there's some birds chirping and it's like things are starting to wake up. That's what this piece represents. It's a very still way it introduces the melody, just like how when you're starting to wake up and you're kind of groggy and still in the sleep state and kind of in that meditative state of consciousness where you're halfway between the dream world and this world. And it's really what this tune is about.
Nice. So this is Paul Nowell's tune Morning, and it's pre-recorded, and we're hearing it now on the Life Changes Show.
Oh,
Paul Nowell, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Paul, thetrombonist.com is where people can find you. As a matter of fact, Paul the Trombonist on all the socials. And on the Life Changes show page, we do have a link for a free masterclass. Paul, tell us about that.
Yes, it's a free class where you can get started if you're interested, if you're a musician and you're interested in getting your expertise out there and finding students and how to build that. It will tell you exactly how to do it, the whole process, the whole entire roadmap. And we've had a lot of people that have gotten insane results just from that free class. So it's up there for you.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing as you have today. This has been so much fun, and all the best to you regarding everything else we talked about and all the exciting things that are coming your way.
I'm excited to be here, and I'm honored to be here, and I really appreciate you putting this together. And I know how much work goes into one of these broadcasts, and I really love what you're doing. And I've seen some of your previous guests, and you've had some really amazing people on here, and keep doing this, because this is really special what you're putting out into the world.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for saying that. It's been special having you on, and look forward to more from the Paul Nowell camp. Actually, Nowell, and I should spell that Nowell, Paul, but you just find him as Paul the Trombonist, like Paul the Trombonist.com, yeah, and on all the socials. Yeah. All right. Well, perfect. So thank you once again, Paul Nowell, and another big thank you to Julie Wignall. And that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeur, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.